The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International.
We're back.
It's been about a month between episodes of Brent and Lydia Talk Starman. You know, like whenever we have this much of a break, I never quite know if I should just go, yeah, sorry, and then just keep moving, or kind of give a little bit of explanation.
Well, I think the explanation is fine. I mean, I'm sure the listeners would like to know. What happened? Dun, dun, dun.
So part of it is, you know, we had spring break here. We both live in Japan.
Yep.
And that kind of late March, early April is when the academic year, the financial year, all changes. So I had break. I went, you know, I did some camp things, and that was fun. The also part of that is, it seems like that time of year is also when last-minute construction goes on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so literally right next to our building, another building was being demolished. and I don't know if that had anything to do with the end of the year. I just kind of assumed until I looked like, wow, they're actually just tearing it straight down. So for about 3 weeks straight, Monday to Saturday... we had constant, like, you know, you've got the handheld jackhammers.
Yeah.
And then you've got the ones where, like, a big crane does it.
Yeah.
They were using the big crane.
Okay, is it one of those, like, wrecking ball kind of things?
No, I was actually kind of disappointed. I was hoping to see a wrecking ball, but it just looked like a super-powered crane with, like, the jackhammer on it. So the only times where I was readily available, like on our usual, hey, let's get together, outside of my window was a constant dun, 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 which, you know, I know this episode doesn't have remarkable sound quality, but it doesn't have constant jackhammering going on. So I kind of felt like, you know, through a little bit of fault of my own of just being... busy, but also you can't control the weather or the neighborhood construction.
No, so, you can't. Yeah.
Sorry. How about you? How was your little break?
Well, I did a lot of creative stuff, I would say.
Nice.
Yeah, I actually posted a cover on YouTube of a silly song. Okay, I don't know whether it will be offensive to say that it's silly, but I mean silly in a non-mocking way. There's this YouTuber on YouTube, of course, because YouTubers are on YouTube.
It's a good place for him.
Yeah. His name is Ryan Heger, and he made a fake K-pop band. And so we're talking, like, even though it's fake, but because he's a professional YouTuber, so it looks very legit, the music video and everything. And the song, it's made by one of his friends who's also he's a musician, but he also posts on YouTube. That's why the quality of the song, it was a really, really good pop song. So, but the entire song was a satire of the K-pop industry. It was just really funny. So what I did was, I wanted to sing the song, but I couldn't because it was in Korean. So I translated it into Japanese and I sang it in Japanese.
Nice.
So, yeah. So that's what happened over spring break. And I had a lot of time to myself because my husband went back to Singapore to visit his family.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just me. And it was very lonely for the first few days because I found myself, like, oh no, what should I do? And I was kind of pacing the apartment. But after that, I just got into the groove of things and started making things. And,
nice.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun at the end, and then my husband came back, and it wasn't fun anymore, but...
Hopefully that's not how you greeted him. No. Welcome back! It's not fun anymore.
Yeah, but it was a really fulfilling spring break, and I really did miss our star mentor.
I did too.
Yeah, so I'm glad we're back.
I'm glad we're back, and I'm glad that we got to read issue number 28 today.
Yeah, 28. I really liked it, but let's not go so soon. Yes.
Yeah. I guess we should do our normal bit of what happened in March of 97, and then cover and yada yada.
Yeah.
And synopsis.
Yep. Synopsis, right? I don't know. How do you pronounce the plural of synopsis?
Synopses? I don't quite know. Synopsi?
Synopsi. I don't know. That makes me laugh. Okay. Synopsi. Okay. Anyway, so I believe I'm doing the what happened on that day thing today.
Schmoles.
Yes, and it's March 1997. The only thing that I felt was remotely relevant to me. I mean, dude, I was 9. I really don't. I mean, I remember a lot of things when I was like 3 or 4, interestingly, but there's a huge blank.
But not when you were 9?
Yeah. I remember things like when I was like a baby, like when I still needed to be carried, I think. I remember things from then. I remember people who actually carried me, how I was passed around, but I don't remember what happened when I was 9. I'm not kidding. It's strange. So the thing that I picked out was Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It premieres on the WB television network.
Ah.
Did you ever watch Buffy?
Yes. I really started watching it my first year in college, so that would have been 99, I think, was when I really started. Interesting tidbit, the Buffy gang and I were in the same year, if that makes sense. So, you know, when their show started, they were in their sophomore year of high school, and so was I.
Wow, okay.
So there's always been that kind of interesting little thing. And, you know, I really enjoyed... for the most part, I enjoyed all of Buffy, although I'm one of those like, yeah, I don't know, season 6 and 7 kind of meh. And I really enjoyed Angel as well.
Right. Do you know, I have never watched Buffy or really? Angel. Yes.
Really?
It was one of those things that, okay, because it aired on Singapore, it aired in Singapore, but it was always late at night.
Ah.
You know, it was like 10, 11, and bearing in mind, I was like, 10 years old? I just didn't get to watch it. A lot of my friends did. I don't know how, maybe they recorded it or something, or maybe the parents were... Okay, my parents didn't like me watching like vampire stuff. Anything like, you know, of the devil, I wasn't supposed to watch. So, a strange thing, though, I think they didn't like me watching it alone, because I remember watching Chucky with my mother.
See, I was able to watch a lot of vampire stuff. My parents never had any real rules against that, but I remember, like, I even watched the movie version of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. You know, which came out a few years beforehand. And I remember even as a kid, I mean, I say kid, but this is like late junior high school, early high school. And this might be such a random thing for especially a boy to say, but being disappointed at how many vampire movies were really just an excuse to be kind of like quasi softcore porn.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh wow, this movie, you know, it's at the video store, and this is kind of before the internet is, so you can't exactly check on it. But I'm like, oh, that looks kind of cool. I'll watch. Oh man, it's just. I mean, I don't mind people getting naked, but I kind of just want to watch an awesome vampire thing. Vampires are cool.
Right. I get it. Yeah. I didn't. Okay, I know on this podcast I paint my parents as like these like holy Christian people, but to a certain extent they were. But in all fairness, I was allowed to watch stuff like that if I asked, you know, like So and if I asked if I could watch it, and they would then watch it with me.
Mm-hmm.
So they were very like particular about that, like having parental supervision, like, you know, saying this is not how you should behave. This is not how you should talk. You know, when you
should not suck the blood of people, Lydia. That's completely
yeah.
Especially not with your shirt off. Doing both at the same time.
Yeah. But you know why? I think one more reason why I didn't watch Buffy so much is because I watched a lot of Chinese cinema growing up, and there were Chinese dramas about vampires as well. And we're talking like Chinese vampires, so it's very, very different.
Yeah.
And it was a really cool show. That there are very cool shows over on the other side of the continent, where actually where we live right now. The vampire lore in Chinese mythology is very different. The basic idea of if you suck the blood of someone, he or she will turn into a vampire. That still stands. But the way they are killed is completely different.
See, I almost want to just pause you, because otherwise I don't know if I'll be able to stop talking about vampire stuff. Vampire stuff still holds a sweet spot here. So much so that when you said you hadn't seen it, part of me was like, well, you know, like 70 episodes later, if you still haven't watched the Buffy and Angel things, we should just transition to Brent and Lydia talk
stuff,
Buffy and Angel.
Oh, really?
Just, yeah. You know, yeah. if in like the 2 years it'll take to finish up this project.
Right, I know. Oh, we could, you know, totally. Because, you see, Buffy was made by Joss Whedon. And Joss Whedon is behind Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., right?
Yes.
He's one of the people behind Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was what really got me interested in the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe. Yeah, which somehow links to, like, why, you know, when Brent first talked to me about this podcast, I was like, yeah, sure. I mean, I'm very new to comics, but I'm not entirely averse to it. And I only knew about that because I was into Marvel, like, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Yeah, and it was just one of those things that, you know, it just came full circle. And that's why this Buffy the Vampire Slayer theme jumped out at me. That, oh, okay, premiered in March 1997, and that's like 20 years ago.
Yes.
I don't think I would dislike watching Buffy. So, you know.
We'll give it a shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, okay, so moving on to Starman, issue number 28, with a quick synopsis of this, because, you know, it's kind of a quiet story, and kind of to give too many details is just to kind of give away all of our discussion points in a way, but we basically get the tale of Michael, who is fantastically 70s, and kind of, you know, a little bit drugged out and not quite knowing what is going on, but really enjoying all the delights that the disco scene has to offer, until another blue guy shows up, who Michael doesn't really recognize, but feels like, hey, we both got blue skin, maybe I should? But this other blue guy is able to tell Michael his own history, which he's forgotten again. And then they say, you know what? You and me, buddy, we're going to have to throw down, but not in like the physical way, kind of on the psychic plane using drugs and crystals kind of way. And they duke it out. And only one shall be victorious, which, you know, I kind of feel like it's a spoiler saying who was victorious. But then again, seeing as how Michael shows up in the comic and the other guy doesn't, maybe it's not a spoiler. Maybe it's just common sense. But at the end, when Michael's like, man, that was something. I don't know. Perhaps. Oh, goodness. And then he gets kidnapped. But we still don't know Mike's full history. But we get a little glimpse of his pre-circus era stuff. And that's basically what happens in this issue.
Funka.
So, that cover, what'd you think?
Oh, it was very Guardians of the Galaxy, which is coming out next month. So, I really liked it. But then I realized that it's actually not Guardians of the Galaxy, but it's very 70s.
Yes.
Right? They wanted to make it like that. But maybe, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy tried to make it 70s, but then again, that's another comic. This comic, though, I liked how it was one of those, like, art pieces where things come of, like, somehow, like, come together. Like, amalgamation of things. And then after you read it, you're like, oh, right.
Yeah.
But it's just really cool. It's just really groovy. Yeah. See what I did there?
I like it. I like it. No, I'm right there with you. I like that there's a lot of elements on this cover that divulge, explore the contents of basically the entire issue, but in a very non-spoilery type way.
Yeah.
And it's a very eye-catching cover. But then after you read the comic and relook at the cover, it's like, oh man, that's a lot of stuff here.
Yep. Agreed.
And yeah. It's nice. I like it.
Yeah, and are you putting the lava lamp in, right in the middle?
I like it.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it like draws your attention to it on purpose, and then after you read it, you're like, it doesn't have a place in the story, but it's very 70s, so...
Yeah. Maybe they didn't know, because there's the pills on it, too. Although, the lava lamp was on the... well, we'll get to it. It was on the table, wasn't it?
Yes. I think so, yeah. But it's right... It's, like, right smack in the middle of the cover, so... that was interesting. Yep. Okay, yep. Anything else you want to say about the cover?
No, I'm good.
Okay. I like how it looks chalky. I mean, all the covers so far, I think they look chalky. I think that's because of the way the I don't know what it's painted on. Is it painted on? Or is it,
I think I don't know how painted.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So I like how when it translates to paper or the screen, it looks like chalky. I like that effect. Okay, so this issue is called Super Freaks and Backstabbers. As written on the cover. And I don't know, not all the covers have the title like that, right? On the...
No, I don't think so. I think some have and some haven't. Sometimes what's written on the cover isn't necessarily the name on the inside. I remember that being a case or two.
And I believe it's part of the Times Past series.
Oh, yes.
Yes, so this is Times Past. Times Past Starman, Super Freaks and Backstabbers. And Should we flip the page?
Flip that page.
All right, let's flip the page. Dun! Guy sitting on the toilet bowl.
And, I mean, almost immediately, we get that experience of, you know, the drugs, the because of, like, the Saturday Night Live fever? Saturday Night Fever.
Yes.
suit. We know it's kind of in the 70s. And just the, how would you call it? Like, the weird syntax being used in the thought, not thought bubbles, but in the captions.
Yeah.
Just let us know that, oh boy, Michael.
Yep. Yeah, and the pendant. Did you call it pendant?
Pendant.
Yeah, that thing was that was also a giveaway, I would think. Yeah. Yes. Okay. So, we see a short haired Michael. You need to know that he's short haired and he has like really awesome sideburns. So, and you know, bell bottoms and a suit, what do you call it? A shirt that's like unbuttoned all the way down to his belly button. So, it really just gives you an immediate sense of the era. But then again, because Michael is blue, we're like, wait, is this Earth?
Yeah.
So, he talks about, I feel like the first three panels, it's because it's really just a excuse me, it's really just a monologue. Wow, my voice. Hang on.
Oh no.
Guys, this is called hay fever. So can't be helped. The first three panels, you don't really know exactly where the story is going, but he's like talking about himself, about blue skin and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of it, you do get a hint that he's addicted to something.
Mm.
Like powders and pills, right? Like, yeah, addicted, but he likes them.
Yeah. Well, yeah. With that first panel, basically him being essentially snorting what could be cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's, yeah.
Mm-mm-mm. Yep. Okay, how about you? Anything you want to...
I really like these three panels. You know, I like how the art, the heads, kind of slowly... We're zooming into them as well as, like, scrolling up.
Yeah.
In a way. So we get this nice little, like, diagonal line to it. I'm not exactly sure what's going on, but it just kind of really, you know, moves my eyes around the page. And even just to the point of, I was just thinking how the stars in the background, kind of, they both get the outdoors, but also the gaudiness of the 70s in a way that's not, like, overpowering.
Yeah.
So I just... Yeah, really, really like how everything kind of combines into a, like, a sweaty, druggy event.
Right.
And then how, once we flip the page, it's almost like he's, now that he's kind of got his high, he's just trying to smooth himself out in a way. I'm like, okay, and now I just have to, you know, seem normal.
Yeah. That's exactly what happens. That's true. But once he says that, the scene cuts and then he's like wearing this, like, I don't know, what's this suit called? I don't know why, but I thought of that guy, Conan the Barbarian.
are we talking about the white and purple?
Yeah, that one. I don't know why I thought of that guy, but maybe it's the, like, bearing of skin. I'm not sure.
Maybe.
But yeah, he's like in this like spandex
yeah
suit thing, and And it's like he's, like, I don't know, bearing himself to a throne room. This is not going well.
No, well, I took that as him, like, kind of being a prisoner.
Oh, okay.
With like, the kind of not quite manacles behind, that are keeping his arms kind of behind his back, so he can't really
right! move. Oh, my! I didn't notice that. Yeah. Okay. Right.
So he's manacled there, and then we have, like, a spaceship crashing.
Yeah.
In the next panel, but we're not really giving any explanation about the meaning for this. And because of the way it's being described as like a strobe flicker, we also kind of get the feeling that McCall himself doesn't quite know the meaning of it.
Mm.
But he's also not really interested in the meaning as well. He's just kind of interested in chasing that dragon.
Yeah, he is. Because, and if we flip the page... Mm. We find out that he is really that dragon. It's like, I like how the it's all starry. Do I make sense? Like, it's all like bling.
Yeah.
The next page, once you flip it, everything is bling. Even though it's, I guess it's the background, isn't it? It's that, like, that starry background. Black one. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's definitely a big star motif.
Yeah.
Both in, like, the fields where it's the background, which is kind of connected to the streetlight panel, which is kind of connected to the Michael in Space panel, but there's also the stars and the disco.
Yeah. You know, this third page and the second page that we were just on, I really enjoy the way that the person, like, cut the panels. I don't know if I'm making sense. You know, like, there's a slim one. There's always a slim one.
Yeah.
That's, like, disjointed.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's definitely a great setup. The way, the layouts for it.
Layouts. Really okay, well that's done. Good. Yeah. So that really gave a different dimension to the pictures as well. So I really like that.
And, I mean, not only does it give that great dimension, but I think it's such a great kind of almost subtle way of showing that because of these flashbacks or strobe effect memories that Michael himself is like a fragmented character. His perception is being split between what's happening now and what's happening then.
Damn, yes. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do we go on?
Because we get, when we turn the page again, we get our double page splash, and it's gorgeous.
Yeah, and I swear you can hear the music when you, like, you know. I'm hearing, like, Staying Alive. I don't know about you, but definitely Staying Alive.
I'm going with, like, Cut the Cake or something, because they referenced Average White Band a few pages earlier. But definitely that kind of, but definitely Staying Alive is appropriate to the max.
Yeah, you know, I'm very over spring break. I think maybe a little bit earlier than that. I discovered Spotify.
Ah.
Yeah, and I'm very into disco music now, like funk. I'm very into new disco. So we're talking like musicians now, modern musicians. Not that the 70s musicians weren't modern, but talking about, you know, people who are making music right now, they're making 80s funk music in 2017.
Yeah, didn't Jamiroquai put out a new album in the last year or so?
Who's that? Sorry?
We'll talk.
Yes,
definitely okay. Listen to Jamiroquai if you want a bit more modern soul funk type stuff.
Okay. I listen to a lot of Tuxedo. It's like this very kind of indie group that you guys should check out. But definitely they were they would fit in this scene. I love the costumes. I love how the main color in this page is orange.
Mm.
Because I think that's a really unconventional choice, but it really fits so well.
Yeah.
With the whole, this is the 70s, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, and the way the people in the foreground, they are being depicted, like this woman on the right, you know, how she's like really dancing with that finger pointing, and like her, you can tell like exactly which dance move it is because of the way her chest is drawn and her shoulders are drawn. Mm-hmm. I can totally see that. It's so awesome.
Yeah. And speaking of the art, well, we might as well do the credits
on
our splash page, which is writer James Robinson, artist Craig Hamilton, inker Ray Snyder, letters Oakley/NJQ, colorist Gregory Wright, assistant editor Chuck Kim, editor Archie Goodwin, with this being A Tale of Times Past, 1976, Super Freaks and Backstabbers.
Yes, this is a little bit of an anachronism because I think I just cheated and looked at Google. Super Freaks, you know the song Super Freak by Rick James. It mm-hmm. came out in 1981. This is 1976, so it's I think it might have been one of those like you know deliberate anachronisms, but then that's kind of cool. And also, don't you just love the way that the credits are being put out this issue? It's like yeah, in all these like these little panels and like with the characters and the colors and
so it feels genius. Very cinematic.
I know, yes, that's the word. Yes, I love it. I love it so much.
I mean, I think Craig the artist inker team of Craig Hamilton and Ray Snyder do a great job in this issue. We've already talked a little bit about the kind of the unconventionalness of the layouts, and that just kind of continues. Everything is captivating. Everything looks great.
Yeah. But
really, to me, the colors by Gregory Wright just help make this issue.
Agreed.
You know, like you mentioned the orange here, but we've got so many weird colors, the greens, the purples, the mixings,
that,
you know, I don't know, I can't talk intelligently about colors other than to say I feel that in lesser hands, this book would have looked very garish, where instead it just looks, it's really easy to look at, and it's just gorgeous.
Yeah. I was so impressed by all these things this issue because usually I take note of like more technical things like the writing in the writing, technical things in the writing. But this one was like I found myself noticing, you know, these things like layouts and colors and I don't know. It's just like captivating. It's just if you want to read, I would say if you want to read, a Starman issue that would just keep you reading to the end, I would pick this one, maybe.
Yeah.
So, really, really liked this, especially this double page spread. This is probably my favorite. I don't know, because you know, I like the one with the one where the characters are introduced. Do you remember that one? I don't remember which issue it is.
Yes. With the, at the beginning of, Sins of the Father, was that it?
I think so, yeah.
With where we have the city in the background?
Yes. Mm. And then you have all the, like, main characters that are coming up. And, they are also similarly in these, like, you know, consecutive panel things. But it's definitely an entirely different flavor because that one had like you know each person's face or it depicted some kind of like impending drama but this one is like a showcase of little snippets of what's happening in the book or like the 70s and it's really a different style and completely different colors. The only similarity is probably the you know, consecutive, like, lined up panels. But that one and this one so far are my favorites. Like, these are the two that have really, really left an impression on me.
Nice.
So now that I'm fangirled, over that.
And then on the next page,
yes,
we get like a bit more of a quiet moment, and I don't know. I like these little pages here, because you know this whole page. You know, I'm thinking about, like, purpose, right? And its purpose just seems to be to, without giving us the exposition of what is McCall's life like, it's just kind of telling us about what he's doing to give us that exposition. Does that make sense? Like, they're not saying, Michael goes to parties and he has lots of sex and he does a lot of drugs and he does this and this. But it's kind of like, hey, are you coming? We're doing this. What's going on? There's a party. Oh, you know her. Remember, you guys, you did the nasty bang bang.
Yeah.
And they got all this information here. So they're showing us how he lives.
Yeah.
In a way.
I get what I mean now. Yeah.
And it's just, I really like how it's handled.
Yeah, same. I think it's a very clever use of one of those writing tools where you sort of use a very non-important character to set up the scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in this case, it's that guy with the cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't appear later, I think, and. But it's one of those things where he becomes the eyes of the reader in a way.
So
it, like, it's a very clever use of characters, I think. So really huge kudos to, I guess, who was behind this, James Robinson?
Of the dialogue or the art?
The dialogue, the whole introduction of this character. Yeah, I don't know what's his name, but yeah, it's I think it really very succinctly and effectively tells you immediately, you know, this is what Michael's life is like right now.
Yes.
Yeah, that's very clever.
And this, okay, here's the point where I don't know if I should bring something up or not, because I don't know if it counts as a spoiler for later in the series. So I'm kind of on the fence, because there have been hints at it, but I don't think it's been directly said. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at what's happening here. I'm going, like, I wonder if this is just a little bit of planning or not.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, if we look at who Michael is asking about. He's asking, well, will Lewis be there? Will Rutger be there? He's not asking if Rona will be there or if Belle is going to be there.
Mm-mm-mm.
You know? And I just think that that's a nice little subtle way of maybe giving a little bit of information about Michael without necessarily giving information away.
Ah, yeah. You're right. Yeah, definitely.
And that, you know, I don't want to. I feel like I've already kind of said it, but I don't want to get more explicit because I'm not sure if that reveal has necessarily happened. But you know, it's a nice little bit.
Yep. Okay.
Mm.
And then Comac.
Oh man, yeah.
Yeah, he is an interestingly proportioned man.
You're going to have to go more into that.
I don't know, his arms are very big. Don't you? Like, it's like he skipped leg day or something. I don't know. But yeah, he's... I mean, you look at at Michael. Michael's fit, but this new guy, I said his name already. His name is Komak. But he's just, I don't know. I don't mind it, though. I mean, he looks good, but it's just that, you know.
I really like both of the two panels we get that almost like explore him a little bit more, like his opening panel where we really get his arms and hairy chest, and then on the almost the entire opposite diagonal to that where it's him taking the cigarette and those kind of soulful staring eyes.
Yeah.
But I think it's such a great entrance of the person who, in a way, is the villain of this issue.
Yeah.
And even that he calls Earth Meridian. He's like, it's Meridian. You know, Meridian. That crappy planet we ended up on. Meridian.
Yeah. I liked how they came up with such a pretty name, though, that, you know, I mean, it's already existing, this bit of vocabulary, Meridian, but I don't think it's meant to refer to Earth, right?
Yeah, it's something with, whatchamajig, like, there's the prime Meridian, longitude and latitude. There's someone who knows stuff about maps who's yelling at us right now.
Definitely, yeah. But Meridian is a very... I don't know, I thought it was very pretty. Yeah. And this is a little bit off tangent, but don't you just love that little disco ball?
I do.
In the middle of the page, there's a little disco ball. I don't know, it was just like, oh, look at that layout.
Just so right quaint. There in the middle.
Yeah. I love it. I love how it's so, I don't know, it's so understated, but it's so much. Mm.
I wonder if we didn't have that disco ball, would there be a little thought going like, what's with all those pink rectangles?
Oh, right.
Like, he's like, oh, well, it's from the disco ball, obviously, that little mini disco ball.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. I never thought about that. Okay.
So we get and here's where we do kind of jump into a little bit of an exposition dump. And you know, I found it all interesting.
It wasn't one of those like you know, in the previous these type of issues, it wasn't lengthy. I didn't feel bored at all throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I just did like a quick count, and basically the next, depending on how you want to count them, 6-7 pages are all Komak saying, here's the story until now. Go ahead.
Sorry, excuse me.
I actually
burped.
Blame that on allergies, eh?
Yeah. I think a huge reason why I didn't get bored is because I'm very conscious of Komak and Michael actually having this conversation. Excuse me. And it wasn't just like, here, reader, have this chunk of text from an invisible narrator. You know, it wasn't...
Are we referencing an earlier issue by any chance?
Yes, we are. We totally are. I know exactly what it looks like, but I can't remember the exact issue. You know which one, right?
It was with describing the... what's his face with the painting?
Yes. That guy.
The beginning of our last arc.
Yes. That guy, the demon guy.
Yeah, not Rasputin.
Yes. Yeah. But this one was very effective. When it came to the tools that James Robinson, I guess, used for storytelling. And well, I don't know if it's actually James Robinson, but I guess the creators, like the way they chose to present the information to the reader, and the pace as well, the pace of the narrative, like this happened.
Yeah.
Right, and also if you notice the art, look at the art. It's always involving either Cormac or Michael, like with the cigarette.
Yeah.
Right, and even the fingers holding onto the cigarette. I thought that was like genius. You know, the flashbacks are in black and white, and then you have the cigarette. Wow, that was just so genius, like.
The lighting of it is really, it's really easy to miss, but it's once you see it, it's like, that's perfect.
Yeah. Oh, man. Who's responsible for this? Seriously.
Yeah, like, I honestly don't know if it would be in the script that Robinson wrote or just up to Hamilton to kind of pace it out. Could be a combination, but it's such a great way of doing it. And I think, you know, like you said, the way that it's done as a conversation, or just someone telling a story, even though it is, you know, several pages, it feels like it moves really, really fast.
I love it.
And the delightful art on every page really just keeps things moving. It's visually interesting. The story feels very concise and not overblown. I'm looking at the next page where it's mostly Michael sitting at the desk, and then in the cigarette smoke we have the kind of heroes
fighting. Yes, like the swirly ribbon things, right? Yes. Like, oh, that was so cool. Yeah, I really liked that as well. And question, under the lava lamp on this page, there's like a little signature kind of thing. What is this? Is it the artist?
Yes. I think, I don't recognize his signature, but I think that might be the top one. I think might be the signature of Craig Hamilton. You can almost see like the stylized C and H. And I think the bottom one is for the inker of, was it Ray Snyder?
Okay.
So I know that sometimes on certain pages, artists will sign it. And yeah, you know, I don't know quite what the reasoning is of why they'll sign one page and not another. But yeah, I mean, definitely with a page this glorious, I can see wanting to claim a little bit of credit for it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they definitely should have done it, and I'm glad they did. One thing, though. Now that I've sort of, like, realized that the art is a bit is different, I mean, it used to be, before this, it was a different person drawing, right? It wasn't, like, it was Tony Harris, was it?
Yes.
I mean, in many of the issues that we've been reading, it's been Tony Harris. And now that I've, you know, noticed that it's Craig Hamilton, the acting in the faces, it's different.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and I don't know, it's so strange now that I'm noticing it, like, I didn't notice it in the beginning, but like, it's not actually the expressions that are different. It's the way that the faces have lines, you know? The faces have so many lines, and that's such a, like, okay, I'm not an art person. I don't know how to say this right.
Try it.
Okay, but it's just entirely, I think the approach of using these lines, it's quite ingenious. Like, it's not just the lines make all the difference, you know, but I think it's like some sort of like pseudo shading thing.
I understand what you mean. And I don't know how to put it into technical terms either. It's weird, because on one hand, I would say that, I mean, this works perfectly in this issue. I'm wondering if it had been like a different marriage between matter and artist, if it would have the same effect. Because it almost feels like, whereas we are getting a tremendous amount of emotion and reading off of the characters here, on some level I also think we're not getting the same amount of acting as we have been given by Harris.
Right. I'm actually looking at Starman 25, which is the an issue drawn by Harris. It's I think it's the last one of that previous arc where they, they vanquished the not Rasputin. And there definitely aren't a lot of those lines in the faces. There are, but it's not like, you know, the, a lot of the faces are like porcelain smooth for Tony Harris. Yeah, and you can really see the acting comes in the way the features are arranged. It's not like this one right now with Hamilton, where it's, you know, the expressions come in the form of I would say the those lines, the shading, the way shadows fall, if you can call them shadows. So I just wow, I didn't notice it until you said that this was drawn by Hamilton. I mean, I knew at the back of my mind that this was not drawn by Tony Harris, but to seek out the differences didn't occur to me. This is kind of cool. This is very cool.
What's going to be really interesting as well, as you keep reading more, and, you know, sadly I can't say, I don't know enough about Hamilton and Snyder, their kind of working relationship, but you'll notice how, I mean, obviously time plays a huge factor in the development of art, right? I mean, if you look at someone's art over the span of 10 years, there's going to be a gradual transformation. But in comics, since they're not always going to be the same penciler working with the same inker, just even changing inkers can have a drastic effect on how the art works. So, like, right now, when we're talking... I mean, the main reason I'm bringing that up now is we're talking about, like, kind of the... What is it? The hatching, the lines on the faces. I remember that from my like seventh grade art class. Of the lines, and you know, I honestly don't know whether the credit for that should go to Hamilton or if it should go to Snyder, who put it there.
Okay. I see.
But I mean, it's glorious. But yeah, it's definitely. This combination is very different from the partnership we've seen between Harris and Von Grobiger.
Yep, definitely. Okay, moving on?
Yes. You know, I really only have one little bit about the page where we get... the two at the table with a lava lamp, and then the middle is like a guy in like a red suit with a white emblem. I've only got one small thing to say about that, which is neat, because between my last reading of this comic and now, I've read various other comics. So now, like, the names of Daxum and the Dark Stars have a little bit of meaning for me. Whereas in the past when I've read it, I had no idea. And I'm only bringing that up just because, like, I think it was neat that even though I have a deeper understanding of what they're referencing, I still don't really know, and yet it doesn't hurt the story at all for me. That's really it.
Cool. Okay, I don't know the other story, so...
I just like that there's, in a way, Easter eggs that aren't necessarily valuable.
Okay, got it. Yeah. I don't have much to say because it's really just a story about what happened on Michael's planet. So can we move on to the other page?
Sure. Where would you like to take it up from?
Good question.
Because, yeah, I guess to kind of build on what I just said, I've never read the classic appearances of Michael. So I don't know how much of this is rooted in those classic stories, how much of this is kind of added in for this. And in a way, for the world of Starman, I don't think it really matters.
Okay. Maybe we skip the page and go to the part where they're talking about he brings out this device that lets them astral project. One thing,
yes,
I find really, really awesome about this issue is like the imagination of all this technology. The pills, the crystal, and now this device, and it leads to like the whole issue about imagination. Excuse me. Oh, hay fever. Okay, so a lot of words that Michael uses are constructed, there was this one called was one earlier, wild something, wild time or something like that. And later we would see a lot of so-called made up words, but you know exactly what they mean. We are not on that page yet, but it's like, wait, give me a moment. I'm just looking for them. The font is very small. Blood pain, you know? And there's one, the heartbeat one. I don't know where it is, but it was describing a heartbeat. I don't know where it is right now, but it was Sharpcraft. Sharpcraft. And that's also you don't really know what those words mean to him. Yeah, so it's like an extension of the imagination, I think. That's, and it all fits into the universe, you know.
Yeah.
Of this universe of, because it's always so important to give the reader a sense of displacement when you create this world that you need. You can't educate them in every single aspect because you only have like what, how many pages and how many lines of dialogue.
Yeah.
But the way they make it is like they use it so effectively that in that short span of time, you know that, okay, these are very different people. They have their own language. They have their own, you know, their own parlance. Not really their own language because they are speaking English, maybe, but you know, their own parlance, and how it's just so clever.
Yes.
You know? It's, yeah.
It's a way to remind us that these are beings from another world without just being like, oh, I see you, Glublaglan. Did you get my flahuzits and the blood of the buzz?
Yes, and yeah, that's exactly it. They did it like with such sophistry that it's so like, you know, it's like, it's not like in your face. It's so it's of a different class. I just really like it. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, me too. And you know, I like that. I like the poetics of it. I like the fact that, I mean, we're about to get to the battle scene, but
yeah,
the reason why earlier I called was it Cormac?
Yeah.
The reason I refer to Cormac as like the kind of villain is in a way, like, you know, I mean, he's dying.
Yeah.
He's got a disease, and it's herpes, but it's deadly to him.
Yeah.
but he's dying, and just that, like, you know, he wants to finish the mission. Mm. Like, so he knows his passing counts for something. Like, you know, there's a way of looking at this story where, in a way, you know, Comac's the villain because he's coming after Michael, but in a way, Michael's the villain because he's the traitor, and Comac is just the one last cop who wants to finish his one last job before he dies. Because he doesn't other than wanting to, like, hey, let's do our death feud, Comac doesn't necessarily do anything evil.
Yeah.
In this comic.
Yeah.
You know, I just like that there's more than one world, more than one way of looking at it.
Yeah, definitely.
And that, in a way, kind of right before the fight and through the fight, there's, you know, maybe it's just me, but there does seem to be a little bit of, like, subtle eroticism throughout.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, you're definitely not mistaken. I think that there's even in the language is very charged.
Mm.
Yeah, so definitely not mistaken. Okay.
Yeah, I don't really know where we want to skip to. I know we get the splash page of them fighting.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time is another just fantastic looking page.
Yeah it is. You're talking about the one with the disco ball at the back, right?
Yes
And how the little bit of text down there, it goes like, let's boogie.
Yeah,
and then you can hear the music.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we get the signatures again.
I can tell right now that it's Ray Snyder, you know? It's mm-hmm. so smart. Yeah. The RS.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, well, I guess, you know, these spandex suits are mandatory for people of this planet. because they are wearing their suits, which probably have some kind of weaponry installed. judging by the claws on Comac's fingers and
the robot eye.
Yeah, robot eye. And so let's move on.
I mean, and again, just I remember thinking when I was reading through the comic, like, seeing that the build up and the double page spread of going, like, you know, there's a little bit of subtext to it.
Yeah,
The next page when we flipped it after that, of when Michael, like, really just, you know, gets that lampshade going, like, and it's almost sexual. It's like, almost.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Like, I think it's a little bit more than sexual, especially once we get to the final page of the fight, the climax, as it were.
He says some things like, this stark game of heat against heat and skin. Against skin, heat and this stark game of heat and skin against skin. Yeah, those are the words. And so but it's beautiful, you know, the part where it's so weird to say this, but the scene where Michael actually kills Comac.
Mm.
And then you see, like, Opal in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at that intricacy. I don't know. It's like, oh, that aerial view of Opal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's like a very time-consuming miniature model. So I really appreciate the work. Wow, you know what you think about it? One comic book like this, it takes a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah, it does take a lot of work.
Yeah. So, you know, it really it's really an art form that a lot of people overlook. I think a lot of people, you know, people like me who don't, it's not part of my culture. You know, it's not something that we actively seek. So that's this, being able to be introduced to stuff like that, I think it's really cool. Yeah, and again, star motif though, you know.
Yes,
it's so subtle. It can we just point out that? Can I just point out that this is very different from the one? You remember the frame that I like so disliked?
Yeah.
In the Sins of the Father? I can't.
No,
remember.
No, no. That was during the well, not Hell and Back, Heaven and Hell. No, but the one where they go in the painting.
Okay, yes, that's the one, yes. The one where the cover is, like, one big cover. The covers of the... Yes. Yeah, that's one. Yeah, that one, I don't know, it really irked me, but this one, the star motif, it was done so cleverly. Like, it's so subtle, but you know it's there because it's so obvious. It's, like, not just, you know, pretty stars. We're talking about, like, the kiddie stars that come in stickers. You know, those shapes, the five-pointed ones. Is it called five-pointed stars? Yeah. So it's right there in your face, but you don't feel like it's a hindrance.
Yeah, no. And it's never forced into it. It feels like a very organic part of the art.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, there's very few pages in this entire comic that doesn't in one form or another contain stars. And yet it doesn't feel overdone.
Yeah, so really like it. I also like the four-pointed stars, the prettier ones that come up. I don't know why they have that contrast. There's definitely some meaning to it. Like, why they make that choice. Like, okay, this background is going to have five-pointed stars, the kiddie ones. And then this background is going to have the pretty one.
You know,
I really would like to ask.
I think looking through it, I think when it's the four-pointed ones, those are meant to be real stars, like stars in the sky, whereas the five-pointed ones, the more cartoony ones, are meant to be kind of a part of the art.
That makes sense. Yeah, definitely. Now that you look through it.
Yeah, because I'm only seeing the four-pointed ones when they seem to be part of sky or space.
Yes. Cool. Oh, yes. All right, guys. Go look at this issue.
Yeah.
Because it's so awesome.
It is. And then, you know, just you know, we've hit our over-hour points. I'm going to start kind of shoving us along. Hope you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
But because, you know, the fight ends and... You know, as the issue kind of, like, slows down, it's neat because once McCall starts to leave the club, the stars are at low ebb. I mean, just look at the amount of stars in the background at the end of the fight to the end of the issue.
Yes. Okay. I like how one little detail that they didn't miss out was, you know, that scene where Michael is coming back and then he's like in a shower of blue stars, and then there's in the middle panel where he's like descending. There's the signage of the bar.
Yeah.
And then you know, it's like you go back. You go forwards into the issue to look for it, and it's there again. Yeah, so I like how this continuity thing is not overlooked. Just reinforced.
The continuity of just the creativity and the structure of it's really nice.
Yeah, super. Okay. So, we go to the end? Do we go to the end?
Sure. Well, we have the end of the end of the Michael segment, which I don't know. Well, did you also feel just that kind of
slow down?
I did, definitely. The way that the scenes were being paced, like, you know, they didn't jump scenes. They gave it step by step by step. Yeah. Like that, yeah. Right? So, yeah. That was very nice.
And something about the coherency of the words, even though the coherency has kind of stepped up, it's like the pace, the intensity of them have gone down.
Mm. Yeah. So, do we go to the part where he gets kidnapped? Yeah. We don't know who that guy is, though, right? Do we?
No.
Okay.
You know, and just what a smart decision to on that last panel to have the... I'm looking at the page where we got Jack, and we got Shade, and we got Michael, and on Michael's vertical panel, just below the sidewalk, it goes to white.
Ah! You are absolutely right. Yeah, that makes so much sense now. Like, oh, it's, again, so cinematic.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, and then funny little juxtaposition between Shade and Jack, you know, and everything, you know, the caption boxes, the font, the light, the candle versus the lamp.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? And and how it's like bright in Jack's place, and how he's such a slob with like what's on the floor, like, you know, Pez. Oh, there's a Pez thing. Do you see the Pez thing?
Yeah, and a little pirate toy too.
Yeah. So, you know, things like that. And then of course you have Shade with all his knickknacks and stuff. Both of them, like, Shade has his, like, walking stick thing with the eagle head. And then Jack has his cosmic rod. And, things like that.
It's nice. It's nice how they're so different, yet so the same.
Yeah. And the book, though. The book is the exact same one. Like, Shade is writing the book, and then Jack is reading the book. Mm. Yeah, the journal. Very nice. Everything, you know, there's such a... It's so cool. Like, seriously, I think they really did make a huge effort to do that, because, like, there's a box on probably a box of cigars or something on the shoots table, and then the desk, and then you have, like, pizza box on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. No,
it's a nice little... my words are failing me.
Yeah, if you put music to it, you probably would, like, it's like, the one on top is like classical music, and then
it's like mirror images, but they both are similar.
Yeah.
That's terrible. I really, really liked this issue.
Yeah, same.
It had an incredible flow to it. Both in the art and in the words, you know, they enhanced each other. I mean, like you said, this really kind of paints a picture of what a good comic can do.
Yes, I'm like a huge advocate for this issue. Yes, definitely. Oh, I really hope that people will get to watch it, honestly, because I don't know, not watch, have to read it, because it is such a gem.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, you know, and that I think as Starman goes on, and we've had lots of good issues, and we've had some not so good issues, but I think just, you know, the more Starman goes, the more we kind of get this type of really connected storytelling where it feels like there's lots of meaning going on. It's the reason why this is kind of one of the comics I keep coming back to through the years.
Right. Yeah, I would just come back for the writing, the language of James Robinson. I don't know. It really affects me, I think, the way he writes. In the like, his openings are always very powerful. It's so apt, you know, the way he uses his words, like. I don't know how to say it. Like if it's about music or something, he will use music-related words, like, you know, still the strobe within me, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just, I really admire him. It's really a master of words. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So I guess it's time to wind down. And yeah. Brent, where can they find you on the internet?
Well, they can find me. My main page is deadlytroubadour.com. And there's a link to that in the show notes. You can also go to Facebook, and I got two different pages you can like on Facebook. There's my Brent Thomas author page, which is, you know, lots of stuff that I write. And then there's also the Comics League International page, which kind of is more focused on my geeky love of comics as well as shows like this. And then if you like those two things, you might as well go to the patreon.com/Brent Thomas, which, you know, if you're enjoying this, you can kick in a buck or so a month and help me continue to support this habit of mine.
Right. Yay.
Where can they find you on the internets?
Okay. You can find me on Twitter, on Instagram, on YouTube, and on Facebook at all the domain names. /quek channel. That's QUEK channel.
So much easier.
Yes, I did it on purpose. I made everything up for, like, at the same time. So yes, so you can find me on those spaces and those places. And I look forward to seeing you guys in my socials and on Brent's socials as well.
Yay!
Yay!
So,
see you guys next time. We are sorry.
Yes, hopefully we'll be able to get back on a regular weekly schedule of posting again.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And for those following along at home, the next issue we're going to talk about is going to be Starman number 29. So I look forward to joining you there.
Yes, same here. Goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, 'cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children lose it, let the children use it, let all the children boogie.